Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Wednesday afternoon slash evening. It's, I guess, early evening here in San Francisco. Tim Bontemps is down the street from me. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Brian.
I had enough of him staying in my hotel the last round. We're in the same hotels. I said, enough. And joining us from home, aren't you happy to be home in Dallas, Ben McMahon?
I was all ready to welcome you guys to my humble Adobe here. Is it Adobe? Adobe? I don't know how to pronounce that word.
You botched Adobe and Abode.
It's called Abode.
Well, an Adobe can be.
We're off to a roaring start.
The Mavericks didn't do their parts. I'll just keep it simple and say howdy, partners.
Oh, my buddy Chris DeMarco from the Warriors was very happy to point out three games into the series after I'd said the Mavs could win in six. He sent me a text and said, can the Mavericks win four games in the next three? And I said, it took you 3 weeks to think about that one, didn't it?
Won't be six.
No, it will not.
I'll tell you what, if it had gone nine, I like the Mavs' chances.
Bontemps and I are out here covering the finals. And so we are doing, we're going to have this grouping going into to every finals game. How many finals games will it be? We don't know, but so we'll be back with you for Sunday's game two. But before we get ahead of ourselves, we're going to talk about game one, which will be today. This podcast is coming out on Thursday, the day of game one.
Well, Brian, we made predictions, at least Tim and I. I don't know if you bothered to. So we probably should start with that, shouldn't we? If we're going to talk about how many games
you
it
know
might be.
That I didn't make a prediction. You know that I don't make predictions.
I was setting you up for that.
You put your prediction in within 30 seconds of the end of game seven. We were in Miami.
That's correct. I thought before game six of the Celtics Heat series that if the Celtics won that series, I was going to pick Celtics in six, which I did. And for all the people in Boston who are very mad that I didn't vote for Jason Tatum to win MVP of the Eastern Conference Finals, I said Jason Tatum win MVP of the finals. So
real
that
quick,
was my
McMahon,
pick.
I agree. I didn't have a vote for Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I know you had a vote, McMahon, for Western Conference Finals MVP, the Magic Johnson Trophy, which ended up in Steph's hands. Mm-hmm. Was that unanimous vote for Steph?
It was unanimous. And as the rep from the NBA office inquired about my vote, I said, Steph Curry, and tell anybody who votes differently that they're an absolute idiot.
You said that on the last podcast. You're losing your brain. I thought you were.
First of all, I've never had it. I don't even know how to say Adobe.
Which is not the right word again.
Adobe means house in Spanish, but abode is, I don't know what language it is, but it means your house.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. Espanol.
Before we get your prediction, McMahon, what did you think of Bontemps being the lone person?
It's total Bontemps bullcrap. I mean, it's Bontemps. When you're not very smart, you have to like go out of your way to pretend to be intellectual. And so this is Bontemps just, oh, look at me. I'm going against the grain. I'm so much smarter than everybody. I'm going to pick a guy who stunk for a few games in that series, by the way, and was on the losing side. Simple prerequisite to be a series MVP, your team has to win the series.
I don't know about that. I mean, obviously that's going to be the overwhelming. It's going to be that way 99 something percent of the time. But it shouldn't have to be that way.
No, Jimmy Butler was the NVEP, not valuable enough player. His team didn't win the series. You're eliminated from consideration.
Well, hold on a second. In all seriousness, why do you have to win the series? Why? No, I mean, really, why?
Because if you don't win the series, you weren't valuable enough. I'm sorry.
I don't necessarily agree with that, McMahon. I mean,
okay, well, you guys probably have Chuck Howley jerseys then.
I don't get that reference. I'm sorry if that makes me like a fool. I don't know.
He was an old Cowboys linebacker that was on a losing Super Bowl team and still got Super Bowl MVP.
Well, that's right. So what's happened? Jerry West had it happen in the NBA. It happened one time in 75 years.
Yeah, it hasn't happened since the invention of the freaking internet in either sport.
What does that have to do with it?
When it happened, those guys used to they'd have coolers of beer on press row. A bunch of drunken doofuses made those votes. That's how that happened.
Can I give my rationale?
And I'm kind of wagering that a drunken doofus made this vote.
Well, look.
Did you see where Bontemps went at halftime?
I'll give you my rationale if you're done lecturing me. Look, I thought actually part of the reason I was going back and forth all game. I was asking a bunch of people. I was texting Brian. I was asking our buddy Nick Friedel, who was sitting next to me. I was asking a lot of people because I was going back and forth between Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Jimmy Butler. And Nick, I thought, actually summed up the reason why I ended up voting for Jimmy, which I was honestly surprised. I thought he'd get at least another vote or two. Like, I did not think I'd be the only one who voted for him. And Nick said, when you come back a few years from now and think about this series, the only thing you're going to think about is Jimmy Butler, which I think he's right. That game six Jimmy had was one of the single best games I've ever seen anybody play. He's the only reason that series was competitive. And the two guys on the Celtics were really good, but they both had rough moments throughout the series. I didn't think either one of them. Oh, really, and Jimmy didn't? Well, I didn't say Jimmy played. He didn't score 40 points in every single game. He only scored 40 points in two and had one of the best games I've ever seen in game six to get it to game seven. And then at 35 in game seven, nearly dragged his team over the line at the end. So
can I give you a simple bit of life advice?
Sure.
Never, ever, ever let Nick Friedel have any influence on your decision. Okay.
Well, I thought he had a very good point there. And I thought about it all game. And I just thought Jimmy was the most important player in that series by a significant amount. The Heat were completely overmatched anytime Jimmy wasn't involved in this.
It was a incredible feat that the Heat got that series to game seven, and an outrageous feat that they got that game to a single possession in the final 30 seconds.
And here's the other thing about my vote too. Jimmy Butler takes that shot with seven.
Did he give you a few cases of Michelob?
By the way, Jimmy didn't like it. Jimmy didn't even want to talk about it. If Bontemps had asked Jimmy, Jimmy would have been like, no, don't vote for me.
Yeah, because he has seven. Four brain cells, which is Bontemps plus Friedel combined, come up short.
With 17 seconds to go, Jimmy Butler pulls up for a three-pointer to put Miami up by one, right? If that shot goes in, Miami wins the game. Every single person votes for Jimmy without hesitation.
Yeah, because they would have won the series.
Because Jimmy Butler missed.
Small detail.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying. He was by far the best player in the series. So because he misses one shot, he's now completely eliminated from consideration. And I just don't think that's how it should be.
I will say this. Like, that's a lot math. Of people, when they saw Bontemps' vote, they were like, well, did you not watch games 3 through 5? And I mean, like, if you want to disagree with the vote, McMahon, that's fine. I agree with Tim Bontemps that you don't have to win. I think obviously most of the time, almost all the time, that's going to be the case, but that shouldn't have to be a prerequisite. But the reason that he was the MVP was because of games 3 through 5. And he didn't play poorly because he was choking. He played poorly because he had an injury. And it was the overcoming of the injury to score those points to carry them in game 6 and 7 that was the reason why his candidacy was stronger. The fact that he was, injured in game 3 and limping through games 4 and 5 are the reason he was the MVP, not the reason he should not be considered.
But
I didn't understand that rationale.
What about when Tatum went back to the locker room and had like a 30-second shoulder surgery?
Well, what about when Tatum had a miserable game? What was it? Game 4? I mean, part of the arc of a series is a guy doesn't play well and then recovers from it. So I don't know. Look, I'm not like saying I'm pounding the table here saying that, Bontemps is right. I just felt it was a reasonable choice.
Three guys are reasonable choices. I'm honestly surprised that nobody else voted for Jimmy. I thought he'd get a couple of votes. I thought Jalen would get a couple of votes. I didn't think it would be 8-1. I was surprised.
Oh, anyway.
Now on to the NBA Finals.
Right. McMahon, your prediction is?
I went Warriors in 7. I do think it's going to be a great series. I'm fascinated by how well the Celtics can defend the Warriors shooters. I think they will defend them well enough to make it a long, tough series. I think Boston would have to make it an ugly series to win, and I don't think they can do that 4 times.
Hmm. And Bontemps, what was your rationale for?
Well, I think to McMahon's point, I think that the Celtics getting out of playing Milwaukee and Miami, I think they're going to feel a real breath of fresh air playing a team that's not as physical and kind of pounding as those two teams are. I think it's going to be a different thing for them. And obviously, the Warriors are far more explosive offensively than this Miami team that was Jimmy and a bunch of guys who were limping around. But to me, the reason I ultimately went with Boston was watching this team play all season. They're just really big and physical at every position. And I think they play with a physicality, sort of like a boxer that just hits body punches all game. When you get to the 10th, 11th, 12th round of the fight, you see guys start to kind of fold as it goes along. They just run out of gas. And you've seen in these series, as they've gotten deeper against Brooklyn and Milwaukee and Miami, it's sort of been the same thing. As the series has gone along, teams have just sort of faded as they felt that weight of that physicality over and over and over again. And I think to McMahon's point, ultimately, I'm picking Boston because I think they're probably the single best team in the league in terms of being equipped to guard the Warriors. Because when the Warriors are running all their sets on the perimeter with Poole and Clay and Steph and Andrew Wiggins, the Celtics have guys who can guard every single one of those guys. And then they've got either Robert Williams or Al Horford, who's going to stand 20 feet away from Draymond Green and say, "All right, Draymond, what are you going to do?"
You can't do that. That is an invitation into dribble, handoff, wide open threes for the best shooters in the world.
Well, my point,
you can't just sack off Draymond.
Well, that's what the Grizzlies did to success before Draymond got ejected from one of the first games in that series. And it's when Dallas had, Dallas had success also when Draymond got taken out of the game with foul trouble, or I should say Golden State had success against Dallas when he got taken out of the game with foul trouble. And Draymond, they have the ability to take advantage of Draymond's issues on offense. I think that in ways few other teams do, because they could stick to those shooters. They don't have to scramble because they have guys who could stay with them across the board. So I think the physicality and the defense the Celtics have, I think, will be enough to get them over the line. But I'm with you. I'm super excited for the series. I think it's going to be really long. It's going to be really close. I think it could go either way. But that was why I went with Boston in the end.
Well, and we haven't seen close games very often in these last couple of rounds, but in close games, the Warriors have a massive advantage because the Celtics, for whatever reason, have just been a bad clutch team.
They have. Like, and I'll tell you what, Jaylen Brown, his free throws, like, I'm not saying it's on the first page of notes about this finals, but I will just comment as we are on the eve of game one. Jaylen Brown's free throws are very concerning. Jaylen Brown's turnovers with the ball and his free throws are both very concerning. However, he literally has made dozens and dozens and dozens of great plays in this playoff run. But he totally botched two free throws at the end of game six that almost cost the Celtics their title run. But you're right, McMahon, their clutch numbers haven't been good. And they win game seven, but I would say survived it was a better way to say it, because they get up an 11-0 run, just not acceptable. And also at the end of game six, the game is tied 99-99. And in the one possession, Jaylen Brown gets fouled and misses two free throws, but they went five consecutive possessions where not only did they not score, they didn't get a good shot.
Right.
So I think you're right. I think if the game is close, it could favor the Warriors, the games that are close.
And the turnover thing, I think this, and Bontemps, I think it was last series that you said this, tell you the Celtics turnovers total and you'll say who wins the game. I think that's even more so the case against the Warriors, because turnovers against the Warriors are death. Because what you're going to end up having a lot of times is Draymond pushing it, and he's surrounded by, Steph, Clay, maybe Jordan Poole in the game, just guys who, you're talking about giving these guys clean, open transition threes or layups. And that's not, the Celtics in the half court situation, when they can set their defense, they've got a chance to make things tough on the Warriors. Transition, you're dead.
No, I agree completely. And to your point about the clutch, he's obviously talked about how incredible a turnaround the Celtics have had, right? Going from 23-24 to being 28-7 down the stretch, having a plus 15 net rating, twice as good almost as Memphis in second, best team in the league second half of the season by a mile. But you go back to the beginning of the season, the Celtics blew one fourth quarter lead after another, and they were horrible in the clutch. And the thing about that 28-7 to end the season, they basically played no close games, and the close games they did play, like against Dallas in March in Boston, They lost those games. And you saw, as we all saw, game six and seven were pretty much, you know, they had to escape from game seven. And like you said, Brian, Jalen misses those two free throws. The Heat score a bunch of points in a row. The Celtics are having shot clock violations, turnovers, and everything went to hell. So I think, to your point, McMahon, that's going to be a critical thing in this series. Can the Celtics hold up in games that are close? Because they have not shown to this point the ability to do that.
Yeah. And so the thing about the Warriors, I mean, the Heat were, of the remaining playoff teams, the Heat were the weakest half court offensive team. Mm-hmm. The Warriors are the best. The Warriors are one of the best half court teams of all time, if not the best, whatever. And so the challenge will be different for Boston this round. I think both teams will be a little bit surprised at the strengths of the other in terms of when they actually get into face it. They obviously know each other well and have well scouted, et cetera. But the difficulty of staying with all of the Golden State movement, mm-hmm. even with a team that is equipped to handle that, it will be a shock to the system. And it will be a shock to the system, as Bontemps referenced, just how long the Celtics are to the Warriors. The passing lanes and the shooting alleys will be swallowed up. And we'll see about Robert Williams. He's a big factor, yeah. But there just aren't many players in the NBA who play like Robert Williams.
And I think he's a huge key. And you're talking about the Celtics' length, especially when they're playing with Williams and Horford, and then, you know, obviously those huge wings. Kevon Looney kicked the Mavericks' ass, and he was a huge part of putting the Grizzlies away as well. Looney was really, he was a dominant force. I mean, he sent the Mavericks into
I'm not saying that I would have voted for Looney for MVP, but if there was a ballot of three people, he'd have been on my ballot.
Yeah, him and Wiggins would have been the other would have been the other two. Probably Steph, Looney, Wiggins, you know, whatever.
Luka could not be considered because his team lost, right? So there's no chance.
Correct.
If Luka averaged 40-point triple-double, he would, no way, he couldn't have it.
Also 2-12 in a game. But yeah, no, you're not getting considered when your team gets beaten five games. So
I'm feeling worse as I go about my vote, as Brian is so vociferously defending it.
Listen, anytime
why would you feel worse about it?
Anytime Wendy's on your side in an MVP debate, you are in jackass territory.
I mean, in 2015, LeBron got votes for finals MVP.
Yeah. And in 2015, a bunch of goobers gave it to Iguodala. And now people are talking about, well, Steph's legacy is on the line because people got that vote wrong.
Yes, I agree with that. Listen, not the to be clear, not the legacy's on the line part, the Iguodala winning MVP part.
The thing about award voting, it's not an IQ test. Don't try to prove how smart you are. Vote the obvious vote. Let's not make, you know, we're not doing calculus.
We definitely, if we're talking about who, if trying not to show how smart you are, we know you have a lot of practice with that. So it's okay. I know you're good at it.
That's how he goes through life.
That's right. Well, and I think to your point earlier, McMahon, it was funny. I saw Bob Myers earlier today, and we were talking about the series a little bit. He goes, you know, it's funny. I watch Boston and they remind me a lot of us. And I laughed and said, that's what I've been saying for two rounds. Because like you said about the Celtics throwing the way and it being death for giving the ball to Golden State. This Boston team is so big and fast. They get, and everybody on the court other than Robert Williams who plays can grab and go, including Al Horford. Yeah. So if they get a rebound or a loose ball, they can take off. And I think it's going to be the same thing with them. Cause to me, when you look at Golden State in this series, now they got away with a little bit in the Dallas series because Dallas really only had Luka with the ball other than Jalen Brunson and Spencer a little bit. And they missed a ton of open threes, but the Warriors defense, particularly on the perimeter, is I think going to be a pretty important factor in this series because they don't have a lot of guys to match up with these Boston players. Like,
well, Gary Payton II could play a key role.
Well, let me speak about Gary Payton II. So it's not, I don't know if they're specifically running a bit of an attempt to a smoke screen.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he'll be listed as in the injury report that comes out in the morning when this podcast is. Right now, he's listed as questionable. In the interviews he's given the last 2 days, he has made it sound like he is not quite there. Right. Now, again, maybe if you are practice today, he was power dunking on that elbow. But he was specifically asked about his jump shot and he basically didn't give an answer.
Yeah.
And so, by the way, which would be natural if your elbow was messed up that you have to shoot with. So yeah, I think having Gary Payton healthy and having that perimeter size and his ability out there with his quickness against what the Celtics present, it's a huge factor. Otto Porter, he was being bothered by that bad foot at the end mm-hmm. of the Maverick series. He's questionable. I don't know if we're going to see Iguodala, but Iguodala right. has also been upgraded to questionable. But if you have Gary Payton, who's limited in his ability to take a jump shot, not that that's his game, but he does sit in the corner.
Yeah.
And stretch the floor.
If you feel like you don't have to guard him, it's problematic.
Especially if you're already playing Draymond Green.
Well, and they already yeah. were probably not going to guard him much, right? I mean, that's the thing. Like, if he goes from being a guy that can maybe cut and be a little bit of a factor to one that's really a non-factor completely on offense, like against the Celtics defense, you can't, to me, have a lot of complete zeros out there on the offensive end of the court.
Primarily because right. if you give Robert Williams, who already likes to play free safety,
yes.
if you make there no risk or very minimal risk in having him play free safety, you're playing into the Celtics' hands. So I would yeah. just say that I do think the Gary Payton is a major thing. We're all going to be watching that aspect going into game one.
And so is Otto Porter. That's a big yeah. injury for them. Otto Porter's yeah. become a critical piece for these guys. Because again, you look at their players on the perimeter. Andrew Wiggins has done a nice job defensively in these playoffs. After him, Klay at this point, I think, is still a question coming off these leg injuries he's had.
Klay is a target at this point. And right. he has a history of being a very good defense player, but understandably, he's not the guy he used to be defensively
right.
or offensively, although he's coming off a great closeout game.
But you're talking about Klay, who is not the same guy who used to be one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, man-to-man mm-hmm. defenders. Then you've got Klay and Poole, Steph and Poole. I mean, Steph's okay. Poole is not. Like, you're starting to talk about a lot of guys who are not going to be able to guard.
But in aggregate, they are a good defense.
And you know who's very good perimeter defender? Kevon Looney. Like, the Mavericks made the mistake in game two of getting sucked into trying to hunt Looney, and yep. they scored 13 points in the third quarter while doing it.
Well, and I think to your point, I think Looney was amazing in that Maverick series. And we've seen for years, man, going back to when we covered Warriors Rockets, right? Kevon Looney's always been a guy who's been good in space in those switches, guarding guys.
Yeah.
But I do think he's not going to have quite the same impact in this series because of the presence of either Al Horford or Robert Williams on the court basically at all times. He's not going to be out there against some Lilliputian out there grabbing offensive rebounds all over the place yeah. and dominating the paint. So I think that is one thing that I expect to go the other way in this series, where I do think the size inside of the Celtics will help negate some of the obviously massive impact he had in that Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, and Poole's a matador. I mean, Poole's a bad defender. He's a yes. hell of an offensive player, and he's fun to watch offensively. So quick and slippery, and yep. obviously can shoot it, but he's terrible defensively.
And Ime Udoka has shown no fear in going at somebody over and over and over again and saying afterwards, this is why we did it. Like, God bless this guy.
Yeah, poor defender.
He is. I mean, listen, he is the best in these interviews because whether he's talking about his own team or he's talking about the other team, he has realized that when people talk to us in the media, it's not stuff that everybody already knows on the other team what's going on anyway. So if right. you just say, yeah, this guy can't guard anybody, it's not like it's a surprise.
Well, here's the thing.
I appreciate the way he approaches it.
He's not bombastic about it. He just says it matter-of-factly. And then he goes, yeah, I mean, there's nothing I'm telling you that I haven't already told our guys.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
or told the other team
right.
by game. And by the way, Jordan Poole, he's well aware. Who did he call out for being – oh, was it – who did he call out for being a poor defender in Miami?
Duncan Robinson, I believe.
Duncan Robinson, that's right. Yeah.
He also said after Jimmy Butler just stopped. He also said after Jimmy Butler basically just stopped shooting threes, like, yeah, you know, we started guarding Jimmy like a big because he wasn't shooting. It's like, well, yeah, it's true.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Supercuts. Let's face it, life is busy. Between work and family and more work, our to-do lists have a way of getting longer instead of shorter. Luckily, Supercuts is here to make at least the haircut part of your life easy. Supercuts is perfect for people who need a haircut but don't have a ton of time for a haircut. No more scouring the web for salons with availability. You can use the Supercuts app to find the location nearest to you and check in, or just walk in. Another bonus, the salon shows estimated wait times, so you know exactly what you're in for. That way, you're only in salon when you need to be. And don't expect to stay a while. As for the cut itself, it's always super solid. Thanks to Supercuts, highly trained stylists. Get in, get out, and get to that thing that you needed a haircut for. Whether you've got a big presentation coming up or a wedding, or you just need some upkeep, Supercuts makes getting a haircut effortless. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. Check in now on the Supercuts app or on supercuts.com. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. All right, before we go on, it is time to squeeze in a little trivia here. Brought to you by CarMax. On the lot or online, CarMax is where you can get taken for all your new and used car needs. Okay, Bontemps.
That is correct.
Now it's time for our Hoop Collective Trivia.
Stats Williams, our guy, here's his question. Steve Kerr is making his 11th appearance in the NBA Finals as either a player or a coach. There are four people who have made more appearances as either a player and or coach than Steve Kerr. Who
Bill
are
Russell.
They? That's one.
Pat Riley.
That's two.
Player or coach, so not executive. Phil Jackson.
That's three. The other one, Bob don't Cousy? Know if McMahon is – that's the right team – wrong per
Casey Jones.
That's the other one.
Okay. Tell you what, man. God, that was easy.
That was some good teamwork.
That was as easy as targeting Jordan Poole.
Stats wanted to give Steve Kerr some love. He asked if we were talking about Steve on the pod. I said, no, I don't think so. He said, that's a good question. So well, use that one.
Yeah. Well, let me say this. Today, and we had the interviews, the little media day, which was very different from, you know, we haven't had media day at the finals in 3 years. It's been since
2019.
Oakland, 2019. So this was a little bit different. The players, you know, the Celtics, I don't want to, you know, they were looking around a little bit. Even Jason Tatum said, you know, it was kind of got the feels when I came into the building and saw the finals logo. And when he came into the press conference, he was looking at the backdrop with the finals logo on it. And it, you know, it sounds not something that you would think about as a big time player, but I know the first time I ever covered an NCAA tournament game, back when they would put they would have the banners on the tables and the team names. I remember seeing that banner and thinking, wow, this is the NCAA tournament, when I was first at one. And, you know, you've seen that finals logo with the cursive F your whole life. And when you're sitting in front of the backdrop, I thought the Celtics were like, wow, we're really here. But the Warriors had their press conferences today, and I sat in there for an hour. And this is my 11th finals I'm covering, just like Steve Kerr.
Just like him.
Yeah, we're in the same list. I don't think I've ever enjoyed a press conference more than I did with the Warriors coming through today. Steve Kerr, Draymond, Curry, Clay. The perspective that they had, the way that they talked about getting here, the way that they talked about their journey, it was just a completely different experience than the other five that I've covered here in Oakland / San Francisco now. And that's obvious. I mean, obviously what they've been through, I mean, they don't need to rehash that, but seeing these guys as, you know, 30-year-olds, seeing these guys as, you know, feeling just a lot differently about where they are in their careers. You know, the last time they were in the finals in 2019, I felt that the entire organization was exhausted, not just physically, but mentally. They were at the end
season was a saga.
Well, and especially with the injuries. I mean, it was a drama all year with Durant, but then you get to the Durant injury in game five and the Clay injury. I know, but I'm just saying after those injuries, on top of everything else, by the end of it, it was just like, everybody was just completely wiped out.
They were so mentally run down from the 5 year experience of competing in the championships. And
Playing 500 something games over 5 years.
But even more than physically, McMahon, just like I remember I talked about how I'd seen this before with LeBron's Heat team and then LeBron's mm-hmm. Cavs team. And I dubbed it organizational fatigue.
Yeah.
And speaking of Bob Myers, as Bontemps did earlier, before game five, Bob Myers came up to me and said, I read your story about you talking about organizational fatigue, and I totally understand what you're saying. And that was before Durant and Clay had gotten hurt.
Mm-hmm.
A couple hours before Durant, maybe 2 hours before Durant actually hurt his Achilles. And so I would just say that, you know, Draymond was talking, for example, about how much different the experience is with him being 33 years old and nurturing a 19-year-old guy like Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah.
And how Kuminga like was laughing at him early in the season. Draymond noticed that Kuminga would always laugh at him. Like every time he was around, he would laugh at him. And for a while, Draymond kind of thought that he just thought he was funny or something, but then he realized he's laughing at me. He's laughing at me because I'm an old guy and I do old guy things, just like I might laugh at a guy in his 50s who does certain things. And he goes, I had to understand that my relationship with him was not going to be as brothers as I saw many of my teammates, but as sort of father son.
Yeah.
And
uncle, nephew, but
right, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
He said father son. And Clay sitting there with that, you know, that Clay smile on his face, that sort of unassuming smile, which I've seen throughout this season, quite frankly. You know, like I've been at, you know, I've been at press conferences during the finals where Clay was trash talking LeBron, you know, or he called him a baby or whatever he called him. I don't, that's not exactly what he said, but you know, and to see Clay just surveying the situation and just, you know, embracing it. And you know, and even, you know, Kerr has been, as we just talked about, he's been to so many of these, but you know, he feels differently about this one. So I'm not saying that means anything, that means that they're going to win or they're going to means they're going to lose or whatever. I just really sensed a completely different experience with the Warriors today than I had in the past.
Yeah. And I got a chance to catch up with some Warriors people who hadn't seen really all year, because I'm obviously most of the time back east. And there was just a universal sense of gratitude, I think is the right way to put it, about being back here again. Like, you know, Bob, in talking to Bob, he was like, you know, look, I'm really trying to just enjoy this run, because the last 2 years have been really hard and they've been through a lot of stuff. They obviously were horrible 2 years ago. Steph got hurt. Clay was out. They won whatever it was, 15 games. Last year, they think they're making the playoffs. They lose a heartbreaker to the Lakers and then to the Grizzlies at home. Don't make the playoffs last year. And to come back from all that and make it through the playoffs and get to the finals, you know, even this year, you had Clay come back midseason. You have Draymond out with the crazy nerve thing. We weren't sure for a while what was going
to
happen.
It's a major thing that happened during the season was whether Draymond was going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like all that stuff.
Steph get hurt late. Right?
Yeah.
You had all the whole Wiseman scenario.
In a bit of a controversial play against the Celtics, by the way, which didn't get discussed today.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's going to be any bad blood about that, but I do think it's relevant that that's when it happened.
Yeah. And now comes Marcus Smart on a bad ankle.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was neat to be around those guys, you know, people like Ron Adams and Bob and, you know, like you said, all the guys who've been through this whole run for 9 years now or 8 years now, going back to 2014. And it was cool to see them all kind of stop and think about it and be like, yeah, you know, it is pretty cool that we're back here. And I thought it was cool the way they handled things last week when they won the title or won the Western Conference title. And they talked about how it was something worth celebrating. You know, you see teams that have been here this many times, usually kind of, you know, whatever. We're not focused on that. But, you know, I thought it was cool that Steph said, this is a moment for us to celebrate. And it's a moment for us to be happy that Clay's here and that we're back here again. And I think from the Boston side, there was looking around. Like, Jason Tatum's usually a very level-headed kid. And he came in and was literally kind of smiling at the backdrop.
Can I say the backdrop this year? I know that talking about the backdrop is very bizarre, and I don't think I'd ever talked about a backdrop before. The backdrop is beautiful. It's a beautiful shade of blue. It's a beautiful shade of blue, and a beautiful, the logo has changed a little bit. It was a beautiful backdrop.
It is cool. But I do think, though, and I think this comes really from Ime, who has been really locked in on this all season, frankly, go back to when things were bad at the start of the year. I don't think the Celtics are going to be awed by the moment in game one. I don't think they're going to come out and be, oh man, we're in the finals. This is so cool. We're so happy to be here, and get smacked in the face. I really don't. I think they're, even after game seven the other night, you know, they're kind of on the other end of it, right? Where they've spent all these years smashing their head into the wall, losing in the conference finals, losing to LeBron, losing to the Heat 2 years ago, having disappointing, you know, getting blown out of the playoffs last year by Brooklyn, getting blown out of the playoffs by the Bucks a couple years ago. They've had so many disappointments and times where they thought maybe we're breaking through and we didn't. For them to get in here, this isn't the end for them. Like they're to me really focused on another four wins. And so while they haven't had anybody who's played in a finals game, they have a lot of guys who've had a ton of playoff disappointments. And even though they're a young team, they're a pretty mature young team. And I think, you know, a lot of credit for that to me also goes to Ime, who has been really rock steady for them all the way through about, you know, our job is to win the next game. We're not getting caught up in this game. You know, they bounced right back from the Bucks series and played a great first half against Miami before falling apart in the third quarter. Like, I think with these 3 days off, I'll be very surprised if they don't come out and play really well in game one.
And it's not as long as the time off is. The Warriors got, obviously, the Warriors got a full week, but these 3 days were much appreciated.
12 games in 23 days for the Celtics. Mm-hmm. From game three of the Eastern Conference semifinals through game seven against the Heat, they played every other day for 3+ weeks.
Trust
three
me.
Days off is huge.
Trust me. I'm well aware.
I'd like the NBA to figure out a way to get at least a rest day or two in the conference finals. I do think it affected the quality of play.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, here's what I'll say about the NBA. I'll get in trouble for this. Oh, boy. Should I stop?
No.
Definitely not.
It is a misnomer. Bontemps has heard me on the soapbox before, so I'm sorry.
Brian on a soapbox? Really?
It is a misnomer. Some of my very good friends, who people whose work I really respect in the NBA over the last decade, have written all about how the NBA should do this, this, and this, and reduce the amount of games and add this rest and all of these well thought out plans to get more rest and higher quality of play. But that is a flawed premise, because it operates on the belief that the NBA's number one priority is quality of play. The NBA's number one priority is quantity of games. And secondary is quality. After you have the quantity of games, then they would like quality. They do a lot of things to try to get quality, but not at the sacrificing of quantity.
They would rather have 7 bad games than 4 or 5 amazing games.
That's right. They would rather have 7 blowouts than 4 games end at the buzzer. They would love 4 games end at the buzzer and then 3 blowouts or whatever, but that's the truth. And I always say this, why does the NBA play best of 7?
Because they can't play best of 9.
Because they can't get away with playing best of 9. So, you're right, McMahon. It would probably improve the quality of play for there to be some extra days off in the conference finals. But the conference finals must get over at a certain time to let the finals get in.
The thing that I would like, since we're going down this road, what I would like is to make the first round shorter. Not like best of 5, but as we all know, these first rounds are like totally spaced out game-wise.
Yeah, have the first round be right.
Have the first round be every other day. I know, but I'd rather have the first round be every other day, especially since most of these games are shorter.
Here we are, you making an argument that's about quality, and you're not realizing that it's about quantity.
Well, I know it's about
television dates that they can fill.
I know. Speaking of, I know it's about quantity. I'm just saying, I would rather have more.
hey, this is a good time to promote that we're going to be podcasting before every game of these finals. Quantity over quality, baby. Here we go.
Brian did say that at the beginning of the pod, but yes, also, now we can remember that.
Also,
I'm glad you remembered. I know we talked before about your lack of knowledge of things, so now we got it back in your head. You can think about it.
Also, while you brought that up, McMahon, we also will be podcasting on the Hoop Collective after the games.
Well, not we.
Yeah,
you. We were booted out of there.
Well,
McMahon, get out.
Right. Frankly, that's right. Bontemps has to work after the game, and he has other assignments. And
what about McMahon?
McMahon will have Miller Lite. I probably just insulted his beer choice.
Dude, please. There will be no Miller Lite. Come on.
Spoken like a guy who doesn't drink.
Yeah, not unless I get an endorsement deal.
And do not alienate potential sponsors. Swagoo and Perk, an ESPN podcast led by its namesake hosts, Marcus Spears, that's Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins. With new episodes every Tuesday morning, Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey, and can't miss conversations. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcast, and also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Ah, that sound has to make you smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Synchronize your online and in-person sales. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/hoop right now. Shopify.com/hoop. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Before we go, McMahon, you had an interesting story that came out with Adrian Wojnarowski that published Tuesday night. We've talked about the Jazz on and off for the last few months on this podcast. Would you summarize what that story said, please?
Yeah, and so the Quinn Snyder question, will he come back or not, has obviously been out there.
Well, let me just say real quick, before, I don't mean to interrupt you, but at the end of the season, Justin Zanuck, the team general manager, said he's going to be back.
No, he didn't. He said he's the best partner that he could ask for, basically. And essentially what Zanuck said is they want him back. That has not changed. Okay. But, you know, this thing, it's dragged on for a month now. And it's not about money. Because
Say it's dragged on. I mean, he's under contract and the Jazz are not going to fire him.
Right.
So
that doesn't mean he's coming back.
Okay.
So Quinn Snyder.
I mean, I'm just saying for a lot of fans, including maybe some Jazz fans, they think what's dragged on? The end of the season came. Quinn said nice words. The general manager said nice words. What's the issue? What's dragging on?
Right. And so, Justin Zanuck's the one who's talking to the media, but the people in the room of the conversations are Ryan Smith, the majority owner, Danny Ainge, his CEO, and basically his right-hand man, Quinn Snyder, and obviously Quinn's agent, Warren Legarry. Those are the people in these discussions, and it's not about money. There's an extension offer. He turned down an extension last summer. There's an extension offer that's still on the table. I don't have exact terms of it, but it is, you know, it would put him up there with the highest paid coaches in the NBA. It's, you know, it's an offer that is reflective of his, the quality of his work. And the Jazz basically said, hey, you can take this extension, or, you know, if you want to go year by year, you want to come back on your contract, which is a 2-year deal. The second year is a coach's option.
That's what he's got left on his contract.
I'm saying, they're saying you can take this extension. You can come back on your existing contract and go put it year by year. Or you can, you know, if you decide to leave, they'll wish him well and, you know, figure it out. I at this point, my informed speculation is that Quinn Snyder's likely going to end up leaving. Now, if that happens, the Jazz would be appreciative of that decision coming sooner than later. You know, they don't want that to be a late summer decision, and then they got to scramble to hire a head coach, put a staff together.
Let me ask you this. Okay. You cover the Jazz closely. You know the people here. Your name was on the story. Would the Jazz allow, I mean, obviously if the guy says, I don't want to coach, you can't say you're going to report for duty on September 25th or whatever. He's not going to coach. Would the Jazz allow him out of his contract, or would the Jazz say, all right, Quinn, sorry about that. We love you. Wish you well. We'll continue paying you, and we have you. We control you. You can't coach anywhere.
I think that Quinn would take a year off.
I would be
guessing on that, and I think
I'm just saying,
if it comes to it, they'll have to figure that out.
If a coach with the quality of Quinn's side, let's just take a little bit out of this lane. Let's just say there was a coach who had the exact same resume as Quinn Snyder. If that coach would become available, I think that there would be teams who would potentially let their coach go.
Yeah.
An attempt to hire a coach who's like Quinn Snyder.
Yeah. And the Charlotte job is still open. I don't think that we would see
Quinn Snyder
be there.
No. I think there would, if a coach like Quinn Snyder became available, I think there would be some teams that would consider, boy, can we go get Quinn Snyder? And maybe a job would come open that's not even open.
Yeah, no, that's a possibility.
That's why that's a relevant question as to whether or not he wants to not coach, or he may not want to coach the Jets.
Well, here's
two different things.
Go ahead, Bontemps.
I was going to say, to me, that when you start getting down that road, I think you come to a totally different question that hasn't come up yet, which is, in today's NBA, are teams paying a first-round pick to get a coach? I think the answer to that question is no. We saw in the past a few teams did that. Clippers did it with Doc Rivers. A couple other times it's happened. I don't think that's happening anymore. And that's no disrespect to Quinn Snyder, who I agree with you guys. I think he's a very good coach. But if he doesn't coach in the Jazz this year, he's not coaching anybody. And he's going to sit at home and wait until next year when his contract's up, then he'll have a fleet of offers and he'll be able to pick his job.
If the Jazz say good luck to you, I mean, I remember Daryl Morey coming out and giving a press conference. I take time off. I'm going to go be with my family. And the Rockets said, okay, here's your buyout. Good luck to you. Oh, my phone just rang. I enjoyed my time with my family. It happens.
He enjoyed that gap week. I'll say this. The Rockets weren't surprised by that.
Yeah. I think that's a little different situation than what this would be.
Yeah. And that was a situation where Daryl was able to get paid by the Rockets because of a clause put in his contract by the previous owner, Leslie Alexander, when he sold to Fertitta.
Where he had the ability to leave.
He had the ability to not just leave, but to double dip.
Yes.
The sense that I get is Quinn would take a year off and, frankly, might really benefit from a year off. I mean, this is, we all know
he also did just have hip surgery.
He had hip surgery. My understanding is he's recovering pretty well. They didn't go in the back and like cut through the glute. They went through seriously. And
you have a lot of information on this hip surgery.
That's like a big difference, but it's still hip replacement surgery. It's not nothing. I mean, it's a very significant surgery. And just think about, we all know Quinn doesn't sleep. like when he, during the season, like how many times did you turn on a Jazz game? Like, dang, man, can Quinn like squeeze a nap in? Like, my goodness, he looks like he's been up for 48 hours.
Yeah.
I think he's worn out. And it's been, think about the last few years for the Jazz being, you know, ground zero for COVID in the NBA and everything that came out of that, all the drama with the Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert relationship, having to manage all that, going from
devastating loss to the Jets.
How about Denver, a change in ownership midway through?
Change in ownership and you know, went from a very hands-off ownership situation to Ryan Smith is very much involved. And I'm not saying, you know, one is better than the other, but certainly it's very different. It's a very different environment.
New boss.
Change in the lead basketball executive. And, you know, Quinn and Dennis Lindsay didn't always see eye to eye. That's been well documented, but still it's a major change. As Bob Timps was saying, you recover from the whole COVID mess, smooth things over, best record in the league, and such a devastating loss in the second round. This year was nothing but kind of just black clouds.
And I was even talking about drama. In the bubble. Weren't they up 3-1 on Denver and then lose, mm-hmm. Mike Conley has a shot ran out. Like, they've just had an insane amount of stuff happen the past few years.
And then frankly, you're looking at it saying, okay, I've been here 8 years, took over a team that had 25 wins the previous season, built this thing into a perennial playoff team. I mean, they've got the West's longest active streak, haven't been able to get over the hump. And honestly, do you guys see a clear path for the Jazz to get over the hump at this point?
No.
The aging of some of their, complementary key core players and just everything else that we've talked about.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier this year, right? That team never recovered from that Clippers loss. And like, they're not coming back from that. Like, we've all agreed on that. It's like, they might go another year with these guys and have them go to the All-Star game. And like, that's what they'll try it again. But to your point,
they host the All-Star game.
The game is in Salt Lake City next year. But like, you can't look at this Jazz team now, even with Quinn Snyder as a great coach and a couple All-Star players and what they've got. What they've got isn't working. And it's not
working well enough. And they are deep in the luxury tax, and it's hard to get better at this point.
That's right. To get where they, to be clear, they've had a great run, but to get where they want to go, it's not working. And when you look around with the Clippers coming back healthy next year, with the Warriors who are going to be good again, Dallas is going to be good again. Like, there's a lot. Phoenix is going to be good. Like, there's a lot of really good teams in the West that these guys have to compete with. And you've got all this stuff going on. And, you talked about organizational fatigue earlier, Brian. This is not making it to the finals 5 years in a row. This Utah Jazz team is clearly a team that's suffering from organizational fatigue.
That's for sure.
Up and down the road.
Yes.
I think to your point, Tim, I think it probably would be good for Quinn Snyder to just get some time off and sit for a year. Because, again, he'll have a list of teams trying to hire him.
Well, yeah, but take a year off, get healthy, focus on his health, focus on his family, has four young kids at home, four young kids and a wife, and recharge his batteries, go into the next hiring cycle for head coaches as probably the number one candidate out there. That's what I think will happen. But again, that's what I think. What I know is Quinn Snyder has yet to make a decision, and that it is ultimately his decision to make.
Your story with Woj had the line that may not have it exactly 100% right. So please correct me. It had the line that the Jazz are comfortable with Quinn coming back on just a 1 year contract.
Right. They want Quinn Snyder to be the coach next season.
So my only question, I don't have reporting on this. I'm asking you, is that a organizational position or is that a bargaining position?
It's a good question. It was made very clear to Woj and me that the options for Quinn are sign an extension, a very lucrative extension, come back, go to year on your current contract, 1 year that's guaranteed, 1 year the next season, Quinn's option, or decide that, hey, it's time to part ways and ride off into the sunset. or limp off into the sunset, having just undergone hip replacement surgery. Now, you know,
like I said, I think how much
of
that
is blowing smoke and how much of that is truth.
The only way there's a fourth option there is, again, if some team is willing to come in and offer the Jazz a first round pick to take their coach. And I just don't think we're in a world where teams are doing that anymore, especially when they can hire the guy in a year. Because I don't think
if he gets totally out of his contract, they don't have to give him a pick.
Right, don't have to do that though. If Quinn decides not to coach the team, he can just decide not to coach the team and say,
I don't get the sense that Quinn Snyder's trying to take another job for next season.
Okay, that's what I'm
getting. Yes. I might end up being proven wrong. We'll see what happens. That would surprise me. Again, I'd be a little surprised if he's back in Utah next season, but not shocked. He hasn't made that decision. I get the sense that he's going to end up ultimately taking the year off, spending time with family, relaxing, recharging. I have been assured that he will not go to Russia this time. His next job will not be in Russia.
Yeah, he left the NBA. Did he leave the NBA, G League, and go to Russia? Is that what happened? Or did he leave basketball first?
No, I think that was after he was on Bud's staff in Atlanta. I'd have to double check the order of things.
Whatever it is. All right. On that note, thank you, Bontemps. Thank you, McMahon. We will talk to you again. We will have a podcast after game one that we'll post on Friday morning. And these gents will be back with me they'll come out on Sunday before game two. Thank you to Andrea and Jackson, our producers. Thanks for listening to Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.